Chapter 5. For a long moment, no one spoke or even moved. Elith felt like a child with a slingshot facing down four armored giants. The frames added about a foot of height to each person, but she was relieved to see that in their surprise, not one of the four had reached for their weapons, not even a hand to a belt. A good sign, particularly because she could feel weakness creeping into her limbs. Her legs trembled from the exertion of the pursuit.
"How do you know my name?" Sarin asked.
"We went to school together," Elith said.
She spoke in the low language, mimicking their dialect as well as she could. It wasn't perfect, but it might be close enough to give the impression she was at least from the same planet. His eyes narrowed as though he was trying to put a name to her face. The more she could keep them off balance, the better.
"Don't worry, we weren't friends," she said. "I just thought you were cute."
"Now I know you're lying," he replied.
Elith smiled.
"You've got a lot of people out looking for you," Hawk said. "Any particular reason you're trying so hard not to be found?"
"The answer to that question belongs to you even less than the pack your friend is still holding," Elith answered. "But I promise I'm not trying to cause trouble for anyone."
"Probably shouldn't have crashed your ship into a mountain then," Sarin said.
"I'd say the mountain more crashed into me," Elith said. "And I don't think it's illegal for me to be out hiking in the woods."
"That may be in most places," Hawk said. "But in this case, you're on our land."
"It was not my intent, I assure you," Elith said. "And if you'll return my belongings, I'll be certain to rectify that as quickly as possible."
"Well, see, that presents us with a bit of a dilemma," Hawk said. "Right now, the fact that what's left of your ship is sitting on our mountain has given the local authorities temporary cause to set up shop on our property. And if they have reason to think you're out here wandering around, they're likely to stick around until they find you, which isn't ideal for us."
"You don't get along with the authorities?" Elith asked.
"We get along fine," Hawk answered, "as long as they stay off our property."
"Ah, I don't suppose you want to give me my stuff and point me in the right direction?"
"It'll be even worse for us if they pick you up later and they find out we held out on them."
"And if I promise they won't pick me up?" Hawk made a small, involuntary expression that suggested he was already tired of talking. That was his only response. The other three held their places, happy to let Hawk serve as spokesman for the group. They were all still trying to figure out what to make of her.
"I'd offer to let you escort me," Elith said, "but I get the impression you might escort me right to the locals."
Ame spoke before Hawk could.
"That would be best for us, and I don't think you're in much of a position to make offers."
Hawk's eyes shifted in Ame's direction at her words, but quickly returned to Elith. He was still evaluating then.
"Well, you're not going to give me my belongings," Elith said, "and I'm not going to let you take me anywhere. Sounds like we're at an impasse."
"Maybe,"
Hawk said. Elith fixed his eyes with hers.
"Then I suppose we'll stand here and see who can handle the cold the longest."
In her peripheral view, she saw Sarin smile at that, apparently in spite of himself, and look at the ground. Elith kept her attention on Hawk, tested his gaze with hers, and saw that the first part of her plan had succeeded. She'd established herself as formidable, a woman of authority and strength. Time for part two. After long seconds of the stare down, Elith's right knee buckled, and she collapsed to the ground, landing on her hip, but bracing herself with her hands. It was an act, but the action came much more naturally than she would have liked. She kept her head down until someone moved toward her. She waited until the distance was right, and then snapped her head up and held out a warning hand, stopping the man in his tracks. It was Kitu who had come closer and who now stood just a couple of paces away. Elith lowered her eyes back to the ground in front of her, but kept her hand out. His posture revealed cautious concern, a willingness to help. In her periphery, she located his sidearm. 8 rounds, assuming it was loaded to full capacity. More than enough.
"Well," Sarin said, "that didn't take long."
Elith struggled to her knees, and then to a crouch,
both hands planted in front of her, to support her, to launch her forward if she so chose. But she held her place.
You all right?
Kitu asked.
I fell out of the sky and hit a planet, Elith replied. So, no, not really.
Kitu looked back at Hawk. The critical moment. Hawk gave a quick nod, and Kitu stepped forward, offering his hand. If she was going to take the weapon, the moment was now.
Sarin raised an eyebrow.
Instead, she took the man's hand and allowed him to help her to her feet. Kitu continued to support her until she withdrew her hand and thanked him with a nod. He backed off a step, but Elith noticed how he held his hands active at his side, ready to catch her if she should start to fall again.
Pretty good show, Hawk said,
and for an instant, Elith thought she'd misjudged him, that he'd seen through it all and that she should have gone for the weapon. But then his right arm and shoulder relaxed, and she saw how he'd subtly pulled his hand up near his appendix, not on his weapon, but a short, quick draw away from it. That gave her pause. Maybe she could have outdrawn him, but clearly her show of weakness hadn't put him off his guard as much as she had hoped. Then he added,
For a second there, I thought you were going to try and fight us all.
Elith shook her head. I've never been much of a fighter.
I doubt that, he said. You've got a wounded tiger kind of vibe, Kitu added.
You didn't think I'd bite? She asked. Kitu shrugged and smiled.
Been bit before.
Hawk stood there, sizing her up, and she could see the struggle in his mind. He was a hard man, but she saw too the signs of a protector by nature. He was caught between the need to secure his home and the desire to do right by a lost, injured stranger. She needed to give him a nudge in the right direction. It was obvious that the group didn't trust the local government structure. Maybe that, too, was an opening to exploit. Look, she said with a heavy, resigned sigh. Not that it's any of your business, but I'm just trying to get away from some things, and it's really important that I don't show up on locals' radar.
And why's that?
Ame asked. Because, Elith started, and then paused, as if wrestling with whether she should answer the question or not.
Because the individual I'm trying to avoid has too many friends there?
Sarin's eyes went to Ame, and she briefly returned the look.
It's just you out here? Hawk asked.
Elith nodded.
Hauling an awful lot of gear for one, he said.
It's everything I own now, Elith said. The rest of it's burning on your mountain. She gave it another moment, then pushed a little more.
I didn't mean to end up here, really, and I'm sorry to be trespassing,
Elith continued. I was headed to Orinesse. I just need some time and some space to figure some things out. I know you have no reason to believe me, and I have nothing to bargain with, but please, please just give me my pack and forget you ever saw me. Everyone was still while Hawk considered it. Elith quickly scanned the others' faces, tried to get a read on them. Kitu seemed most likely to help. Ame, the main adversary, and Sarin looked like he was just waiting around for someone else to make a decision.
We can't just let you wander off, Hawk said, finally.
You can, Elith said, but I get the impression you've decided not to.
I don't think you'd make it far anyway, he said,
and then glanced back over his shoulder.
Anybody up at the cabin?
Sarin shook his head. Hawk turned back to address Elith.
So, I think you should come back with us, he said. We'll get you a place to rest for a couple of days, out of the way, then we'll see what we see.
Elith saw the expression flicker across Ame's face. The woman wasn't happy with the idea, but apparently wasn't going to voice it in front of everyone else.
And how do I know you won't just turn me in to the authorities? Elith asked. You'll know when you wake up in the morning and they aren't there, Hawk said. Otherwise, I guess you'll just have to trust us.
I'm not one for trusting strangers.
That I don't doubt.
Your prisoner, then.
Or our guest, said Hawk. Don't have to put a negative spin on it.
Elith took a moment, as if weighing her options.
Prisoner or guest, she said. The only choice you're leaving me isn't much of one.
Hawk didn't respond.
We're not bad company, Kitu said after a moment,
Except Sarin. He'll grate on you after a while.
Elith glanced at Sarin and he shrugged.
I mean, he's not wrong, Sarin said.
You know how to run one of these?
Hawk asked, indicating his strider frame.
Haven't tried since I was too young to know better, Elith lied.
It's pretty easy. You can strap into mine.
Hawk started to unbuckle the harness of his frame, but Kitu held up a hand. She can have mine, Hawk, he said.
You sure? Long walk back.
Yeah, it's fine. I could use the exercise.
All right, Hawk said,
and then turned to Ame.
You want to walk with him?
Yeah, Ame said, but Kitu was already shaking his head.
Nah, you should stick together. This is my backyard. I'll be fine.
Hawk and Kitu looked at each other for a brief moment, and some message passed between them that Elith couldn't precisely read. For all his apparent friendliness, Kitu didn't seem to like the idea of leaving only two people watching over her. Hawk nodded.
I'll leave the drone on loiter in case something comes up, he said. Stay on comms until you get home.
Okay, Mom, Kitu said. Tether to yours?
Yeah, Hawk said.
Kitu opened a small panel on the forearm of his strider and executed some function on the interface housed within.
What do you think? 20 feet? Maybe 30 for shutdown,
Hawk answered. Once on tether, Kitu's frame would automatically adjust its speed as it approached its maximum allowed range, forcing Elith's pace if she lagged too far behind, or coming to a dead stop if she got too far ahead.
You don't trust me? She asked. More for your safety, Hawk said. Easy to forget how fast you can move if you're not used to 'em.
After a moment, he added,
and yeah, no, I don't trust you either.
Kitu finished the configuration, unhooked the harness of his strider, and hopped out. He waved Elith over, and when she stepped toward him, he held his left hand out and bowed in greeting.
Kitu, he said.
The display of formal etiquette took Elith by surprise, but she mirrored the gesture and replied,
Elia.
The false name was close enough to her own to keep her reactions natural.
Elia, he repeated,
then gestured toward his frame, inviting her to climb aboard. She nodded and clambered into it.
Sorry, he said. It might be a little sweaty.
Good, Elith replied. I don't feel so bad about how gross I am right now then.
Though it was unnecessary, she allowed him to show her how to strap into the harness and was patient with his explanation of the basic controls. Despite his repeated insistence on how easy it was to operate, his haphazard instructions made it sound more complicated than it was.
Kitu? That was so confusing. I forgot how to use my own frame,
Ame interrupted.
She looked at Elith and said, Basically, just walk like you're tiptoeing around.
Elith nodded. She'd used plenty of striders in her time, and that, indeed, was a much simpler and useful way of explaining its function. Kitu looked at the ground, embarrassed.
I think I understand, Elith replied. Thank you both.
Kitu looked up at her, his mouth open as if to say something further, but instead he gave her a tight smile and a quick nod, and then backed away a few steps. Hawk strode to Kitu, holding out a small backpack, which Kitu accepted wordlessly. Hawk then continued past him and stopped shoulder to shoulder with Elith, facing the opposite direction. He leaned close, spoke in a low voice.
Elia, he said, I'm Hawk. Watch your step out here. Ground's trickier than it looks.
He gave her a look then, just for a moment, and she understood he wasn't talking only about the terrain. Before she could respond, though, he stepped past her and made a circling gesture with his hand, then started walking back over the ridge. The rest of the group moved out. Elith swiveled around to follow.
See you back at the ranch,
Hawk said to Kitu over his shoulder.
Yep,
Kitu said with a casual wave. In truth, Elith was well trained on a variety of frames. Taking up the strider was as good as second nature, but that wasn't something she wanted to make known. The challenge, then, was in concealing her comfort and in deciding how long she had to carry on the ruse. Striders weren't difficult to operate by any means, It was more a matter of adjusting expectations than learning a new skill. The frame amplified natural body movement, so the trick was to walk easily by feel rather than sight, knowing that the frame would flatten the mountains and raise the valleys, no matter how intimidating they looked. Elith took a few halting steps, some tentative, some harder than necessary. She'd forgotten how difficult it was to fake clumsiness.
"Take it slow," Sarin said. "Just gotta get a feel for it. You'll get your feet under you pretty quick."
Elith nodded, then took smaller steps, as if testing the surface of a frozen lake. The group moved over the ridge together. As they crossed, Elith gestured back toward Kitu.
"Is he going to be all right out here on his own?" she asked. "Kitu?" Sarin said, and made a noise somewhere between a cough and a laugh. "He's probably the happiest man on the planet right now."
He didn't explain further, and Elith didn't press it. As they made their way down the opposite side of the ridge, she noted how the group had abandoned its previous inverted V formation. Hawk led from the front now, with Sarin and Ame taking positions on his left and right, respectively, with Ame slightly behind. Though there'd been no open communication about it, they'd subtly surrounded her. There was no doubt they were guarding her. But most to her interest, Elith took note of how naturally they'd moved into the formation, how organic and casual it felt. If she hadn't been paying attention, it could easily have seemed accidental, just the result of a few friends walking the woods together. It wasn't long before they came to a small, shallow gully trailing down the slope, and though it was an easy hop to cross, Elith decided to take advantage of the opportunity it presented. When she reached the edge, she pushed off with more force than she knew she needed. The leap propelled her several feet beyond the other side of the gully, just a few steps behind Hawk. On the landing, she surged forward with bounding steps and passed Hawk on his left. She'd barely put her foot down on her second step beyond him when she jerked to a jarring halt that spun her a quarter turn to the right. Hawk was there, one hand gripping the shoulder of her frame, holding her in place.
"Phew," she said. "Thanks."
He kept his hand on her frame for a few moments, his eyes intense.
"Sorry about that," Elith said.
He nodded and finally relaxed his grip. Elith held out her hand, inviting him to continue leading the way. He moved on past her then, but she could still see the tension in his shoulders, how he carried himself coiled, ready for action. Her little test had been informative. Even though they had her frame on tether, Hawk's immediate reaction showed they weren't relying on it to keep her in place. She was very much their prisoner. She resumed her place in the middle of the group, and they kept an easy pace, walking in silence for several minutes. As they approached the bottom of another ridge, Sarin spoke.
"What I still don't get," he said, "is how you knew my name."
Elith looked over at him and answered, "You just look like a Sarin." He looked at her, his brow furrowed. She kept her expression neutral. She gave it a beat, until the momentary confusion melted from his face as he realized she was joking. He shook his head, and then she added,
"You guys are loud talkers. I'd guess every bird, bug, and bear on the mountain knows your name by now."
Ame chuckled at that. The first positive emotion Elith had seen from her thus far. At the sound, Hawk glanced back over his shoulder at Elith.
"Speaking of which," he said, "looks like you got the hang of it now. Let's cut the chatter and get off the mountain."
He picked up the pace then, and Elith realized just how much they'd been holding back for her sake, and just how little he'd been convinced of her unfamiliarity with the frame. Hawk bounded like a hind up the slope, moving with a sudden grace made uncanny by his stature. After that, there was little time for talking, as Elith found herself focused intently on trying to follow in Hawk's wake. How the man managed to find paths through even the densest portions of the woods without slowing, she didn't know. There was no weaving wildly, no crashing haphazardly through branches. He didn't appear to be following any visible trail. It was almost as though the trees themselves moved aside when they saw him coming. She wondered if he'd forgotten her injured state. or maybe was simply relying on the frame's tether to help her keep up. Whatever the case, he didn't seem to be making any allowance for her at all. It was about an hour or so before Hawk held up a hand and slowed the group to a lazy jog, then to a casual walk. At first, Ella thought they were pausing for a rest, but as she looked up the long, steep, tree-laden slope of the next ridge, she saw how it was dotted here and there with small clearings twinkling like the first stars of dusk. She counted six such areas, homes snaking their way up the mountain, with plenty of space between neighbors. Their destination, she presumed. The path they'd taken had ranged up and down so many ridges she'd lost any chance of making a good estimate of the distance they'd covered. Between 9 and 12 miles, she guessed. Maybe even farther based on how she felt. Though the Striders typically made travel almost appallingly easy, the pace they'd kept had her breathing elevated, and she found herself sweating even as the temperature dropped with the sun. Her new companions were similarly lightly winded, but their expressions suggested this sort of travel was commonplace.
"Ame, you want to go let everybody know we're coming in?" Hawk said.
"Yeah, sure," she said, and launched off again. Elith quickly lost sight of her as she vanished up a trail into the woods and the gloaming. Hawk dropped back alongside her on her right as they walked, a casual, friendly sort of move that once again felt natural while also having the effect of securing her between Sarin and himself.
"We'll be up there in a few more minutes," he offered.
Elith nodded. "I'm not going to upset the neighbors?"
"Not unless you're planning to make a lot of noise."
They crossed the nadir and started up the slope, following a wider trail than the one Ame had taken. Compared to everything else she'd seen, it could have been considered almost a road, though it would have been a bumpy ride and probably only one way at a time. It didn't seem like the kind of place that got much traffic anyway. As they continued up the main road, they passed a handful of tributary trails, perhaps half as wide. Down them, and sometimes through the momentary alignment of corridors of trees, she caught glimpses of man-made structures, outbuildings, the occasional cabin. There were no fences, no walls, no imposing gates, just simple homes, built neatly to harmonize with the landscape around them. Though the lines of the architecture weren't nearly as graceful, Elith was reminded of the Paragon's home, which had seemed as much a part of her garden as any of its trees or flowers. There was something of that same spirit here, a careful and intentional coordination between the mountain and the humans living on it. The surrounding forest had lost none of its wildness. There was no sense of its having been tamed. One could almost believe the people had asked permission to build, and the mountain had given it. About two-thirds of the way up the slope, Hawk led them off the road and along a gently curving path on the right. Soon a cabin came into view, its windows and exterior dark, but nevertheless inviting in its pleasant design. They stopped outside near the rear entrance, and both men began unhooking from their Striders.
"You can just leave it out here," Hawk said to Elith. "We'll put them away later."
Sarin hopped out of his frame and disappeared inside the cabin. As Elith dismounted, Hawk walked over and retrieved her pack off the back of Sarin's Strider. Lights came on inside. Hawk gave her a moment to stretch and look around, and then escorted her into the cabin. The rear entry led to a small room twice as wide as it was long, almost like a hallway turned the wrong direction. A row of hooks lined the wall, upon which hung two coats. Beneath one of the coats stood a pair of muddied boots. They passed through the room into an open common area that appeared to be the bulk of the cabin's footprint. It housed a small kitchen, a long table with benches on either side, a couch and a few chairs, a large fireplace. Though warmer than outside, the air was still cool and had a settled scent that suggested it had been closed up for a time. Two doors led off to the left, and through one of these, Sarin appeared, climbing stairs.
"All set," he said. "I'll get the Striders put away."
"Thanks,"
Hawk said, as Sarin exited out the back. Hawk set Elith's pack on the floor by the large table, and then led her to the set of stairs Sarin had just used. It hadn't been apparent from the exterior that the cabin had a lower floor. Elith suspected she was being squirreled away in the basement. From the top of the stairs, she couldn't see what lay below, other than the landing at the foot that opened to the right. When she reached it, she had the distinctive, close, quiet feeling that accompanied being surrounded by earth. There was a tight hallway with two doors on each side. "Bathroom," Hawk said, pointing to a door on the right. Then he gestured to the door across from it. "Guest room." He waited outside while Elith entered. The room was small by most standards, but about twice the size of the cabin she'd had on the Heligoss. Bed, dresser, chair in the corner, small table with a lamp on it, closet. One window, near the ceiling and no more than 8 inches high. From the outside, the window was at ground level, but there was no way Elith would be able to fit through it if she tried.
"Most comfortable-looking cell I've ever seen," she said. "You've seen a lot?"
"Not from the inside."
"Only thing I'm gonna lock up is your pack," Hawk said. "And that's just so you can be sure nobody's gonna go digging around in your belongings while you're here. And you can be sure I don't sneak off in the middle of the night." "We'll be sure of that, whether you have the pack or not," he said.
But then he lightened the comment with a subdued smile.
"But it never hurts to provide incentives. Before I put it up, though, you have anything in it I need to know about? Weapons or anything?"
Elith shook her head.
"You keep all those in the one you're carrying?" he asked,
nodding at the small sling she still had on her. "I don't have any weapons at all," she answered.
"Sure," he said, obviously not believing her. "Listen, I understand the need for protection. I just like to have an idea of what's in my house."
"You don't need to worry," Hawk grunted at that.
"Yeah," he said. "Well,"
he trailed off for a moment and waved a hand vaguely before adding,
"All right then, make yourself at home. Get cleaned up if you want to."
He departed, and she heard him start back up the stairs, but then pause. A few moments later, he returned and stuck his head around the doorframe.
"You hungry?"
Elith was indeed hungry, but she shrugged noncommittally.
"I'll see what I can scrounge up," Hawk said. "Sarin will probably eat the table if I don't. You're welcome to join us if you like."
"Thank you," Elith said. The words seemed odd in her mouth, thanking her captor, even though capture had been her intent. It was a strange situation, and Hawk seemed equally uncertain in his role as both host and warden. He nodded and then returned upstairs, leaving her to herself. As was her habit, Elith's first order of business was to investigate her surroundings. A thorough check of her room didn't reveal any secrets or surprises. The bathroom was likewise unremarkable. The other two doors on the hallway were closed and locked, and though she could have opened them without anyone knowing, she thought it best to respect the obvious wishes of her hosts, at least for now. With her survey completed, she returned to her room, hung her sling up in the tiny closet along with her vest and topcoat, and then sat on the bed. She took off her boots and socks. After all she'd been through, the feeling of the cool wood floor beneath her bare feet brought a simple kind of pleasure, and Elith allowed herself a moment to savor it. It was perhaps because she gave her body permission to relax that her injuries came rushing back to her full attention, and the constant dull ache that had been mere background noise for the past hours became a sudden weight upon her shoulders. She sat there on the bed, taking mental inventory of her various hurts and occasionally testing them with motion or pressure to determine their extent. Her shoulders and ribcage housed the bulk of the pain, though as she evaluated herself, she realized she'd suffered more knocks and bruises than she'd initially thought. It may have taken less time if she'd simply noted which parts of her didn't hurt. She pulled her pant leg up and checked once more her injured kneecap. The bruise had darkened and spread, and the surrounding flesh was swollen and painful to the touch. She straightened her leg out, tested bending it at different angles, felt how the fluid and the already stiffening joint affected movement. It would only get worse. Her body was damaged, and no amount of natural remedy would provide the healing she needed as quickly as she needed it. Though her exhaustion was near total, Elith gathered the willpower to call upon the aid of the substance of the universe. She cleared her mind of all but a single image: silver grass, laden with snow, withered yet still alive. And focusing upon this image, she allowed the words of the deep language to bubble up and then crystallize. She spoke to her body as though it was a thing apart. Winter's grasp falters. Spring renews the world. The call was no mere trick of perception or subtle influence exerted over a willing mind. With the words of the deep language, Elith drew her healing out of its natural rhythm and into the immediate. She felt the warmth seeping first into her joints and then radiating along her bones, a golden starlight washing through her nerves, her muscle fibers, her blood vessels. And it was not without cost. She had touched lightly the infinite pool, disturbed the mirrored stillness, and now, with her mind's eye, she perceived its effect rippling across the placid surface, hypnotic. There was danger there in allowing herself to watch for too long, a risk of falling helplessly into that fathomless depth beyond all measure of time or space. And as her being surveyed her ethereal surroundings, she saw something more on the distant cosmic horizon. A second disturbance, separate from her own, a gliding swell, as though the coil of some leviathan had passed just beneath the surface. It vanished as quickly as it had appeared, but the strange vision shocked her back to herself, and she felt the folding in of her perception once more to her physical environment. For 10 minutes, she sat trembling on her bed, feet flat on the floor, head light, and vision dreamlike. Elith felt the longing awakening within her, and with effort withdrew back to her body and to herself. Though she'd intellectually understood the Paragon's concerns about cutting short her recovery time, this experience of too soon contact with the limitless made it real. A stark reminder of how precarious her situation was, and with it had come a vision of what? Something changed in the fabric of the universe, or perhaps in her relation to it. The trembling eventually subsided, and Elith forced herself back to her feet. She walked barefoot to the bathroom and washed her hands and arms and face. In the mirror, she saw the long marks that striped both shoulders near the intersection of her neck and collarbone on both sides, part abrasion, part bruising, where the straps of her harness had held her fast during the crash. Dried blood still clung to one corner of her mouth. But her healing had already begun, from the inside out. These outward signs would be the last to fade, and once she'd finished scrubbing away the blood, dust, and grime, she felt momentarily refreshed. When she came out of the bathroom, she found Sarin standing at the foot of the stairs with his mouth full and half of a small cake or flat biscuit in his hand.
"Got some food upstairs," he said around the bite. "Nothing fancy, but tastes better than an empty stomach. Coming up?"
In truth, hungry as she was, nothing sounded as good to Elith as locking herself in her room and crashing on the bed. But her body needed the nutrients, and the opportunity to further observe her captors couldn't be missed.
"Sure," she said.
"Great,"
Sarin replied, and he clomped back up the stairs without waiting for her. For a moment, she considered grabbing her top coat, or at least putting her boots back on. The cabin was warming, but still cooler than was comfortable for her. But she knew the effect it would have if she appeared as she was now dressed, short-sleeved and shoeless, content in her circumstances, with no sign of intent to escape. Her casual vulnerability would put them at ease. She padded up the stairs. When she reached the main floor, she found Sarin standing by the fireplace, a dish in one hand and another biscuit in the other, watching over a fire. From the way the bright yellow-orange flames crackled and spit sparks, Elith guessed he'd just gotten it going in the past minute or two. Hawk had his back to her, washing something in the sink. But when he heard her, he turned and nodded toward the table before returning his attention to his work. On the table sat a dish of the same design as Sarin's, either a deep plate or a shallow bowl, filled with a sandy-colored thick meal like porridge or oatmeal. A few strips of some kind of meat were laid on top of the meal, and three biscuits balanced on the wide edge of the dish. A tall mug sat next to it, steaming lightly. Elith crossed the room and started to sit on the bench by the table.
"Warmer by the fire," Hawk said,
without looking at her. Elith gathered her dish and mug and joined Sarin by the fireplace. An oversized chair sat nearby, and she sat cross-legged in it, balancing her dish on her lap and placing her mug on the wide, flat armrest. She was just about to take her first bite when she realized she didn't have any eating utensils. Even with the monoculture of the Ascendants uniting them, manners varied somewhat from planet to planet and city to city, but the meal didn't seem like something to eat with bare hands. She could tell Sarin was watching her, and when she looked to him, he smiled.
"You know," he said, "a biscuit's just a spoon you can eat." "Fair warning," Hawk said from across the room. "We're a bunch of savages."
He started opening drawers and rummaging around, but Elith waved him off.
"No, this is fine," she said. "I'm good."
She tore a chunk off one of her biscuits, scooped up a good portion of the meal with it, and popped it in her mouth. It had a rich flavor and a hearty texture, nutrient dense. She tried a bite of the meat next and found it was salted, like thick-cut jerky, though not as tough. A simple fare, but undoubtedly good for people used to physically demanding work. Those first bites awakened her hunger, and as neither of her companions seemed particularly interested in conversation, she tucked in. The beverage had a strong flavor, earthy and honey-sweet, with an afterburn that suggested a small amount of strong alcohol. This she sipped cautiously at first, testing its effects before committing to drinking it all. But whatever was in it did little more than warm and relax her, and both were welcome. Hawk finished cleaning up the kitchen while she ate and then busied himself around the main room. Elith set her empty dish on the armrest, cupped her mug in both hands, and tucked her knees up. A few moments later, wordlessly, Hawk dropped a light blanket over the back of her chair. She tugged the corners of it over her shoulders and upper arms. The fire had settled, now blue-green over a glowing bed of forge-hot coals. Sarin made some adjustments to it, added a log, and then wandered off. It took a few minutes before Elith realized all of this was purely for her comfort. Sarin had disappeared, and Hawk didn't seem to have any plans to join her. She watched him for a time. He was busy around the cabin, but not with anything obviously useful. It appeared to be his way of keeping an eye on her while giving her some sense of space.
"Thanks for the meal," she said. "Sure," he answered.
Elith laid her head back against the chair and surveyed the ceiling. It was open, its exposed beams well-crafted and joined without obvious mechanism. Simple wasn't quite the right way to describe it. Functional, certainly, but there was an elegance to its design that suggested a far higher degree of intent and craftsmanship than mere function would require. It had something of a hand-carved quality, almost as though the entire roof had been lovingly chipped bit by bit from a single massive tree.
"This is a nice place," she said.
Hawk didn't respond. It was always a delicate dance in the beginning, as she judged how best to navigate early interactions with potential assets, and he was tougher to read than most, but not impossible. His actions spoke of his care for her general well-being. His reticence told her of his concern of giving away information. There was something more than mere unease at having a stranger on his mountain and in his home, a suppressed fear that he was doing his best to conceal. And though she couldn't guess the source of his anxiety, she could at least read the careful balance she had to strike. Appear too anxious to escape, and his guard would never lower. Appear too comfortable, though, and his suspicion would only grow. "A really nice place," she said. "Any guess how long you're going to force me to stay?"
"Till morning," he said, "and then maybe longer."
"Anything I can do to influence that, one way or the other?" He paused, whatever it was he was doing across the room, and looked at her for a long moment.
"You can make it worse," he said, "but I'd rather you didn't."
She returned his gaze and then nodded. "Well, what if I just go to sleep?"
"Probably the best course of action."
She nodded again, drained her mug, and then stood and picked up her dish.
"Think I'll just do that then."
"You can leave those on the table," Hawk said,
nodding at the dishes. Elith dropped them off on the table on her way out and headed to the stairs. But she paused before heading down.
"Thank you for the meal.
See you in the morning," she said.
"Sleep well," he answered,
and sounded sincere. She returned to her room then, locked the door behind her, grabbed her sling out of the closet, and sat on the bed. A quick check of the sling confirmed that her stun baton was on top and easily accessible. She placed the pack on the floor between the table and the bed within reach and where it wouldn't be immediately obvious. Just in case. It felt vaguely wrong to sleep in the clothes she'd just crossed a mountain in, but if anything were to happen in the night, she wanted to be ready to respond. She swiveled her feet up onto the bed, wrapped the top quilt over herself, then reached over and touched the lamp, switching off its soft glow. The room plunged into immediate and complete darkness, with a heaviness reminiscent of a cave. It wasn't long before sleep came. But despite her exhaustion, Elith slept lightly through the first part of the night, attentive to every unusual sound, listening for any warning of betrayal or danger. But she heard none. So it was with great surprise that she awoke in the early morning hours to find a man she didn't recognize sitting at the foot of her bed.